You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/moviebs. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, or typewriter. audibletrial.com/moviebs.
Oh, Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Mayer. They'll see all the movies to tell you which you should watch later. You have seen as many movies as these two, so they'll know the right way to steer you. Movie BS is what I suggest when you're planning a cinema night.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder. You know, it's the only movie podcast on the internet.
I know.
Yeah, and I'm the host of it, Eric D. Snyder, and this is my other host, Jeff Bayer.
Your other host?
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
I'm one of my hosts, and you're my other host.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Bayer. Welcome. It's great to have you along for this crazy summer ride we call Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder. Going to watch movies and then talking about those movies on this podcast.
We have we've shortened that to Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder.
Makes sense. I'll note that.
It's like that's the longer title, like how Doctor Strangelove is technically Doctor Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. But we just say Doctor Strangelove. Yeah.
Got it.
Right.
Speaking of distracting things that have nothing to do with our show.
Yes.
My son, Dylan, 4.5, we're happily regressing back to poo.
Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh.
Sorry.
Clarify,
as soon as I said it, yeah. So, and not only that, my mom has graciously given her whole self to help out my household for 2 weeks this summer.
I know.
And they're poo buddies. And it's the sweetest thing. Like, I even at one stage, I was kind of busy and had to do something. He was like, Daddy, sit next to me. We're going to watch Winnie the Pooh. And I was like, but who normally sits here to watch? And then he just like immediately looks at grandma, beckons her over, and then they begin the joyous calming effects of Winnie the Pooh.
That's cute. It's cute. It's cute when old people and young people can enjoy poo together.
Oh, and I definitely heard my mom laugh more than Dylan, which just I found so adorable.
That's sweet.
So anyway,
that's sweet. Your mom's a lovely grandma.
She is. She's pretty darn good at it. It's like she's been training.
Right. Like she practiced on her own kids, and now she's like really getting it right on her grandkids.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Now, on that light, sweet note, let's talk about a fun light movie called Dunkirk.
Make it stop. But please, let's talk about it. But make it stop. I don't want to.
I don't know if you know this. Dunkirk is the phonetic spelling of the Law and Order sound. Dunkirk. District attorney to prosecute the offenders. These are their stories. Dunkirk. Right?
You just put that in my head for the rest of my life.
Forever, yeah. You're welcome. So this movie, written and directed by Christopher Nolan.
Mr. Batman, Mr. Inception, Mr.
Memento. Memento. He's Mr. Memento. He'll always be Mr. Memento to me.
Yeah.
He made many fine films.
He really has.
I have not disliked any of his movies. And this is... Right. Dunkirk now is kind of his version of a fairly straightforward war movie. Ultimately, the story of it is very standard, true story war stuff. He puts his Christopher Nolan twist on it a little bit with the way the story is told.
Yeah, there's some, intersecting, overlapping?
Yeah, and it's not even, there's no trickery involved at all. It's just he's telling three different stories. In case you forgot your story of Dunkirk, here's what happened. It was a beach in France. Not one of the nice beaches.
Wait a minute. I'm going to fall on the sword here.
Yeah.
Zero clue about Dunkirk before I watch this movie. I'm just going to flat out admit it. I'm one of those people. I don't retain history all that well. I didn't know about Dunkirk. You did?
I knew kind of what it was, but then I refreshed my memory on the Wikipedias.
Beforehand?
Well, before doing the podcast.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was doing my show prep.
Me too.
Which is a thing.
Well, now I know that. Now I know that.
So Dunkirk Beach in France, and this is 1940. America was not in the war yet, but English and French troops were all basically corralled under the beach there. No place to go. 400,000 troops, And they had to get evacuated just across the English Channel over to England.
Yeah, because it seemed as we learned in the film, an airplane could travel that distance in about an hour.
Yeah, it's not a long trip at all.
And by boat was about a full day. So, that was the hunch you were given.
Or there and back was a day. Yeah.
Something like that.
But so the way Nolan tells the story here is he covers the land, the sea, and the air. The land is called the Mole, which threw me off. I did not know that piece of that structure was called a mole.
Everybody needs to listen to this podcast before they go to the movie. Because important. For me, I was
you're
just like,
you're looking for
agent,
a mole. You're
agent.
Looking for a spy, a mole. Yeah, that's right. No. So the mole is what they called. It's those big stone piers or jetties or causeways that jut out into the sea. The defining characteristic of a mole, as opposed to a pier, is that water cannot flow underneath it.
Hey, Eric, if we could just take a pause and if you could say something like, wow, thanks for actually prepping for this week's show, Jeff, instead of showing off that you prepped much deeper for the show, that would be – you'd be a sweetheart.
All I did to prep more probably was read the same Wikipedia page as you, but retain more of it. It's probably all that happened.
Yes. So, okay, that's true. All right.
I think we both put in the same amount of work. So it's three places. On the land and that – and then there's also a story in on the sea where back in England, a regular guy, Mark Rylance, fine actor Mark Rylance, he and his son friend are part of the squad. This I did not know about, of regular British people who were summoned to take their own boats, like their personal boats, and sail over the English Channel and rescue some soldiers. And it turned out there were like 400 boats did this.
More. 700.
700. All right.
I'm just saying I did research. Anyway, what's really interesting here is I did research because I jotted down Moonstone is their boat name. And right. I was just curious if it was a real boat. And yeah, it was a real boat. Who knows if it was real people. Rylance is his the actor's name, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That I'm just now – it's so funny because he has one of the most distinctive, wonderful voices to listen to currently, I think, on the big screen. But it's hard to shake – the BFG for me right now.
Oh, that's right. He was the BFG.
And it was just funny to listen to it, like that voice and just like have like flashbacks of that movie, which have zero relevance, of course, to this experience. But like he's a wonderful addition to American cinema, I think.
He is. And well, and to British cinema, to all the cinemas. He was also – he was in Bridge of Spies. Remember, he was so good in Bridge of Spies.
Yes, yes.
And so
– yeah, he was so good they gave him a little trinket, I think, for that one.
Gave him a little participation award. So the mole and the sea – and then in the air, there's Tom Hardy, the British fighter pilot. Tom Hardy with a Bane mask again. What is Christopher Nolan – what's his obsession with the lower half of Tom Hardy's face?
I don't – well, it's a non-obsession. He
wants to cover it up. And really, that's the best half of Tom Hardy's face. Because Tom Hardy is a pilot. And what's interesting, the Nolan-ish twist on all this, but it's not a twist or a gimmick or a trick, is that the story on the land takes a week. That's a week of that story. The people on the boat is a day, and then Tom Hardy in the plane is an hour. And the only thing that Nolan does differently is he tells us all the stories all at once, as opposed to if he'd done it in regular chronological order, then Tom Hardy would only be in the last 5 minutes of the movie, and Mark Rylance would be in the last, 15 or 20. So to avoid that, and this it's a great device because it lets us see more of these stories and lets us see more detail of stories that would otherwise be compressed in a very small amount of time.
Yeah, he's historically been great with playing with time. Obviously, the best example of that is the Memento. Memento. Good gosh, Grandma. Okay. Memento. Sure. But this is a really nice thing to where it's just like, I don't need a gimmick.
Right.
But I need a little device. What can I use? And it was like, bam, he found it. That plus, of course, I feel like I have a pretty good visual eye. I feel like bad special effects stand out.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is so gorgeous looking, and we didn't even see it in the best case scenario.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned that. What pulls me out of a movie is when I'm watching a movie on the screen and it's surrounded by a black frame, like not just maybe some cropped on the sides, but all around all four sides. And it makes you – it's the difference between watching a movie and a play. When you go to a theater and you see the curtain, you see the proscenium, it's a psychological thing that, you know you're seeing a presentation. And it does have an effect on a movie, which is bad for a movie, especially a movie like this that wants to envelop you and you want to get lost in it. And it's very hard to do when there's a black frame around the screen.
This is a movie where you could consider seeing sitting close on an IMAX screen if you were looking for something to totally and utterly control your thought process.
Be completely immersed, yeah.
Yes.
And in New York and L.A., the screenings were all in IMAX. At least IMAX and maybe IMAX 70 millimeter. It's playing in 70 millimeter and in IMAX and in some places in 70 millimeter IMAX when it opens. But from I did a little poll on Twitter, and outside of New York and L.A., about three quarters of the screenings were like ours. We're not in 70 millimeter or IMAX, which makes me wonder how great is the IMAX if they're not, if that's not how they're showing it to critics, you know?
That's true. That's true. And well, and I would already lean because of the experience that I had watching Tarantino's fill in the blank for me, please.
Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight in 70 millimeter the second time around after I had already seen it at my home because of an advanced screener. Mm-hmm. I was already leaning toward, if I love this, my second experience needs to be 70 millimeter, not necessarily IMAX.
Yeah.
So go about it as your own. We saw it under the non-ideal conditions. But
again, the studio mandated conditions. The studio chosen conditions. Yeah.
And one thing that was great was we had a theater with good speakers, and that sound is incredible.
The sound was amazing, and I wondered how much more I would have enjoyed the movie if it had been the images as well as the sound, that were completely immersive.
But like not only the musical score, which of course he always figures out a way to kind of like bury into your head or your soul.
Zimmer.
Yeah. But then on top of it, like I was nervous from bullets. And that's a hard thing to pull off.
Because there's a lot of bullets in a movie.
There's
like
a lot of bullets, but like it's like they're zinging and they're loud and they're frustrating and nerve-wracking. But yeah.
All of that. I agree with all of that. There's a bunch of characters.
We haven't even started talking
about
the story.
I mean, I don't even know.
That's so
cool.
Well,
that's the thing. There really isn't much story. The story is basically that we got all these troops on the beach. We got to evacuate them. And the main problem is that while we're waiting for them to be evacuated, the Germans' planes are flying around just, you know, dive bombing like fish in a barrel.
They're like having fun.
Yeah.
Killing. And it's really difficult to watch.
Those German bastards.
Somebody should make a movie about the Germans and how they were bad during World War II.
Those inglorious German bastards. The people we meet, they have names, and we hear some of their names here and there. I don't know the names of the main ones. The guys on the beach. There's a pair of guys, and then a third guy who is from One Direction.
Harry
Styles. Yes, he's in there. So I recognize him. But the others all kind of look alike. And what's interesting is that despite not getting a lot of like personal involvement with these guys, I still felt emotion at the overall circumstances. And when the evacuation comes and all the way it is resolved, I was surprised at how attached I was to these people who were essentially nameless and almost faceless to me.
Individuality is pretty rare in this film. Mm-hmm. Like for somebody to stand out, unless your name is Kenneth Branagh. Or Mark Rylance. Otherwise, you're blending in. And then you really are going with like, okay, that one... That human parts his hair this way.
Right, it's that guy.
Has blonde
hair.
That's
the one with the nose, and
yes. And it is amazing that Nolan figured out a way for that not to matter, for that not to hinge on you feeling connected to this. Because it is just like, boom, here you go. Here's war, good luck. Because the whole concept here is, can you, the audience, find victory in retreat? That's kind of how it felt to me, where it's like, what are you going to do with all this information? It's up to you to process it. And it is painful and nerve-wracking consistently. And even when there is hope, he doesn't let you sit in hope forever.
No,
he does not. Like, that is amazing that he pulls this off.
There are a lot of out of the frying pan into the fire situations in this movie. Where, oh, good, we're finally being rescued. Oh, now we're on fire. Or whatever. Literally, in some cases. Yeah, it just things keep. And it is nerve-wracking because there also is not the way that he tells a story, intercutting between these three different stories that are not necessarily happening simultaneously, it makes it so that there's not a lot of momentum or build in the story. It's just sort of it keeps going at more or less the same pace. And so there's not a sense of, we're almost there, or this is about to happen, or we're about to come to the climax. It just sort of, it's going, and I don't know how or when it's going to be resolved.
And even for me, just because it is, it has different rhythms and beats compared to the standard film, there was a moment toward the end where it was a sigh of relief, mm-hmm. and I had actually forgotten that we weren't done here yet with all three stories.
Oh, right.
And it was that shock. And then that even, like, for me, that was like a playful thing to be like, oh, no, that's right.
There's still more.
We're not all safe. We're not all done. This is more. And it just really kept capturing me. You know, I love the Spitfires. Those planes, those Spitfires, and the shots. Again, this is what I'm talking about with, like, the look of this film. I could not tell you when there's a Spitfire, the plane that the English fly, when it's going across the beach, mm-hmm. it's just like I'm staring at it. And like, I don't know. I don't know what building is real. I don't know what is real in the scene. And everything about it feels so gorgeous and beautiful. And you're there in the moment. And the full name of a Spitfire, which I don't think the movie said, is even better. Do you, sir, know the full name of a Spitfire?
Not unless it's the Spitfire Grill. Which was a movie.
Supermarine Spitfire.
Supermarine Spitfire?
Supermarine Spitfire. I can't say it, but you can, and that's what's important.
That is a good name.
Wait.
What?
I totally forgot to name another person that we could recognize in this film. Beforehand, he had individuality. He was hit by a U-boat, and then he had to go...
Oh, yeah, Cillian Murphy. That's right, Cillian Murphy. Forgot he was in that for a minute. Yeah.
And what was our favorite part before the movie started? That running time, that sweet, sweet running.
An hour and 46 minutes.
You kidding me?
It's a summer blockbuster that's not over 2 hours.
You know what it sounds like?
Hmm.
Sounds like opening weekend, people should see it two or maybe three times.
That's true.
Because it's not 3 hours long. They have the extra time.
That's true. You might as well see it a second time while you're out there.
There's no reason to do that except for your personal enjoyment, listeners. There's no secondary benefit to anyone on this podcast.
And a nice tight running time like that takes me back to one of the first things that I loved about Christopher Nolan when I first fell in love with him with The Memento, was that movie to me is the closest thing to a perfect movie and to a perfectly crafted movie and a perfect screenplay in that you can't take scenes out of it and you can't add scenes to it. It's the right number of scenes that do the right number of things. And I always laugh when a movie is nominated for best screenplay and there's like 10 deleted scenes on the DVD. Like, how good was that screenplay when you can cut out 10 scenes and nobody notices?
That's
true. I admire in Christopher Nolan that he writes a screenplay that does what it's supposed to do and no fool around.
Most of the time.
He did make some Batman movies. But he's not.
Interstellar could have been tighter.
Maybe so. But he's generally not a self-indulgent filmmaker. And this movie is intense, but it's not graphic. It's not excessive.
I know. Yes.
It's PG-13, right?
Is it really?
It is. Yeah.
It would make sense.
It's PG-13. There's not any graphic violence or swearing or anything. It's very
so
intense, but not actually like in your face graphic. It's very measured. And many of the emotional, the human beats are small. Many things about the movie are big and kind of bombastic, but the emotional side is more going to be small beats with these characters and these tiny acts of heroism.
And it is a movie of like head nods, and then you know what the head nod means kind of moments.
Mm-hmm. It's really quite good, and surprisingly, it sneaks up on you how effective it is. And again, I wonder how much more I would have liked it if I had been fully immersed in it. I give Dunkirk a B+.
I give Dunkirk a 9 out of 10.
That means it is BS approved.
It is. Hats off to you, Dunkirk. Well done.
Hats off to you.
I don't...
Too late, they're already off. Next up, Valerian and The City of 1,000 Planets.
We get two movies for the price of one?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Sweet.
This is, like most movies, this is based on a comic book. But unlike most movies, it's a comic book we haven't heard of.
Do you know the title of the comic book?
It's just like Valerian and Justine or Laureline or something, right?
Yeah, Valerian and Laureline.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it is very much a pair, and just to have Valerian in the title, come on, Luke. Come on, Luke.
Yeah, I don't know. This is Luc Besson, Crazy Frenchman.
Crazy Frenchman behind, most people will say The Fifth Element in this case, but he's done a bunch of crazy. Yeah. And some very cool, like The Professional.
Yeah, mostly The Fifth Element. And I know he wants to make a bunch of these. So I don't know if maybe each time it'll be Valerian and something else. But yeah, why What's-Her-Name gets taken out of the title? I don't know. Maybe she dies in the second one.
Like, if you look back at Luc Besson and what he's done with his life on film, his oeuvre, if you will. Have I said that correctly?
I will. Yes, I will very much take that.
And you know what's nice? Huh. In all honesty, Eric, I really appreciate the fact that if I say something, you might stop the show. Tell me I've mispronounced a word and let me correct it.
No, I wouldn't.
I like that you will give me that opportunity.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oeuvre.
But what anyway. The women tend to disappear? Is that what you're saying?
They tend to be eye candy first.
Yes.
They tend to be eye candy first, and they can be very capable women, such as Kara, the fine actress here, has shown us. But yes, he does tend to lean that way. So part of me is just like, this fits in his wheelhouse to eliminate her name from the title, and let's keep going.
I noticed you didn't even try to say Kara's last name.
That's right.
This is the actress...
Delavigne.
I can say her name sort of, but I don't know what she's from. But I know I've seen her in 10 things.
She
was in Suicide Squad.
She was in Suicide Squad. I really like her Twitter personality.
Oh, okay.
That's what I know about her.
I don't know her on there. And the guy here is Dane DeHaan, who he's over. Here's Dane DeHaan, such a cute young man when he started out. Looked like a young Leonardo DiCaprio. Did a couple of good performances, and now he's Valerian is okay as a movie. We'll get to the movie, but the casting is entirely wrong.
This main
character is like a Han Solo rogue type. He's a soldier in the future, and he and Kara are partners in going around solving space crimes. They do military missions, going to check out problems and whatever, diplomatic things and whatnot.
And with that movie, and again, we'll get back to the casting. Now let's just keep getting back to things. It's all over the place. Like, it's very imaginative, like beautiful worlds, everything else. And you want somebody that perhaps you can identify with to go into this world with you, or at least be, you know, the Han Solo type. Whereas here we have a guy who looks like he would be better served, like maybe on one of these streets, like at what was it called, Big Market? Like maybe he's in the corner, like strapping and doing heroin. The bags under his eyes,
he
can't go away.
He has this baby face, and he looks like a kid, and he talks like a young Keanu Reeves, and this unearned confidence. But he also, he has this baby face, but then he has the bags under his eyes make him look 50.
Yeah,
I don't know what he's been doing in his personal life, but I can guess it's been a lot of smoking and hard living, because that's what it looks like.
It does look like that. And he is not, nor should he be in the future, if they're lucky enough to make these movies, Major Valerian.
And
I don't know Major Valerian, but it's not him.
He's not a weasel-faced little punk kid. I'm confident.
And Dane DeHaan... Let's be honest here. Luc Besson doesn't spend a lot of time thinking of the funniest or coolest thing to say
for his
quips. But Dane DeHaan also can't deliver those basic lines worth a lick of salt. I think that's what he would be licking, right?
I mean, a salt lick is a thing.
Okay.
Something being worth a lick is unconnected to the salt lick, I believe.
All right.
I mean, you could, I guess. This is, and other old French comic books were the sort of things that inspired The Fifth Element, and that also inspired Star Wars, not incidentally. And you can definitely see this looks like a George Lucas-y big world building, huge variety of aliens, variety of aliens of all shapes and colors, and like a couple of black people, fanciful worlds. And it builds this world, and I think it's very imaginative and creative and fun to look at and all that. And the story is fine. It's basically one of those kind of space rogue stories. There's a giant city in the title is a giant space station that has become over the centuries this massive gathering, makeshift city of people from all over the galaxy, all over the universe. They live in harmony and share their resources and skills.
It started in Earth's orbit, got too big and they had to like kiss it goodbye. Mm-hmm. And then it became something even grander than they could have imagined.
And so Valerian and Loreline,
as they explain, he's a bad boy and she's a goody goody. So then they don't have to deal with anything else. They explain it to us, the audience, and then move along.
And they are set on a mission on this place to go and look into something. And there's also a planet that was dying out, and they've sent a message. It's all your basic stuff from this kind of space thing: a dying planet and a message, and you got to go rescue a thing. I like some of the fun gadgets, the fun devices.
Goodness, yes.
There's a great thing where they go to a place where it's a marketplace, like a big swap meet, but it's in another dimension. You got to wear special glasses. And wear special gloves, they call them, to be able to see and to touch the other dimension. Lots of fun with that, of popping
it's
in and out of this dimension. And
so fun.
Mm-hmm, very creative. I assume that's all in the comic book.
How do you feel about the poop and pearls and whatnot?
Oh, my goodness, I love it. There's a little chubby reptile-looking thing called a converter. And
is his full, like, he's a mule converter? Or is that,
well,
like...
Well, the mule was the name of the planet.
The planet, okay. Yes. Yeah.
And he,
so there we go.
I guess he could convert a mule. Anything you feed him, a pearl or a diamond, whatever, he eats it and then poops out copies of it.
And it's not technically, his whole body shakes it out. But let's, for this sake, talk about a poop.
I mean, they don't show us.
Animal.
I mean, it looks like they're all coming out of the butt area. Because the thing's always facing us, and we just see them coming out of the hind end of the thing. I'm going with that this animal poops pearls.
So I couldn't get enough of looking around this movie.
Mm-hmm.
and just absorbing it all, and the action moves fast enough. I thought we were dealing with something that was going to be interesting to figure out as far as story elements go.
No, not at all.
The longer the movie goes, and it's long, it's 2 hours and 17 minutes long, the longer it goes, you have this creeping sensation of, you know, that most basic potential of this story. Yeah, that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the frustration here is it's that concept of we're waiting hours before it dawns on some characters that they're not enemies, but they're working for to achieve the same goal.
Yeah, my only major problem with it all is that for as basic as the story is, I wish that Luc Besson were better at writing dialogue. In English, anyway. Maybe he writes great French dialogue. But the dialogue in English, it's the simplest. It's all just useful.
Now,
it's very, it's rarely creative.
Did you jot any down? Because I didn't, I realize. I didn't, but I completely agree with this,
here's
this
what,
concept.
Loreline says to somebody she's questioning, she points a gun at him and says, "If you don't tell me where to find Valerian, this bullet is going to find you." That's about as clever as the dialogue gets. That's as creative as it gets. And that hurts a movie that's more than 2 hours long, where there is a lot of dialogue.
I will say, there's some winning moments here. You can take a bow anytime you want, Ethan Hawke. When you're running the Clam Club, and you got Rihanna as a dancer called Bubble, that's good stuff. Clive Owen, you know, it's nice that you're there, but you're barely there. That's kind of how it felt for me,
it's
anyway.
Functional.
Yeah. Rutger Howard, you're barely there.
Oh, yeah, he had a little bit in the beginning.
Yeah.
I give it a B-. It's fine.
I give it a 7 out of 10. Like, I kept trying to get over Dane DeHaan so I could, like, love this movie. It was just really hard.
Yeah, I agree.
Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
The fun part is where they go through and list the 1,000 planets.
Yeah.
Because you think they're not going to list them all. But then they do. That's a good 20 minutes of the movie right there where they're just listing the 1,000 planets.
Right, because it starts just by going north and east and then south. But then, oh my gosh, like...
Start listing them alphabetically after a while.
Yeah. The quiz later, I did not expect that for the movie to actually pause and then people to hand out the flyers and then you have to write down.
The Scantrons.
Yeah.
Then we come to a film called A Ghost Story.
Ooh. Spooky.
This is a story about a ghost, but it's not a scary movie.
No, not at all.
It's written and directed by David Lowery, who made Pete's Dragon last year. And
a wonderful opening
Pete's
scene.
Dragon, yeah.
Pete's Dragon, and the rest of it was good too.
And then he also, before that, he made a movie called Ain't Them Body Saints, played at Sundance a few years back.
Yeah.
That was also very good. Good director, mostly of quiet little movies, and this is a very experimental, cute, and precious kind of movie that is not going to work for a lot of people.
I like to think that I'm open-minded, but it's mainly me thinking that. I was not ready for this experience the first time I saw it. So I'm going to kind of like...
Which was at Sundance, we should say.
I saw it at Sundance. I don't remember if it was the fourth movie of the day or whatever the case may be. And there's a momentum for me where I'm normally kind of picking and choosing the quicker ones, especially or like the more fast-paced films on a longer day, because it helps you get through that slog that can potentially happen.
Sure, sure.
With a long day.
Exactly.
I saw this movie, and it wasn't for me, and I think in the future I am ready to be open-minded for what it has to offer and for me to try to do it, because it's a movie that expects a lot out of you.
You have to meet this movie halfway, at least halfway.
Yep.
Because here's what the deal is. It's Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara play this couple. We don't know their names. The movie just calls them C and M, but call them Casey and Rooney. And they're a married couple, and he dies, and then is a ghost. And the way that David Lowery has chosen to represent a ghost in this movie is with a Halloween sheet over the head with eye holes cut out. That's Casey Affleck, the ghost.
Think Charlie Brown.
Exactly, Charlie Brown, yeah.
Charlie Brown, but with the right number of holes.
With better eye holes, yeah.
Yeah.
These sad, egg-shaped eye holes. And so then as the ghost, Casey is standing around observing, sometimes influencing, but observing his Rooney's life, and then she sells the house, and he stays there at the house as time goes on at the house.
Yeah, the grieving widow, he's witnessing her, but he's also just he's representing how he's stuck.
He's stuck there. He's stuck there, yeah. And
stuck in love, stuck in his past, stuck in whatever.
Right, unresolved things, and. Yeah. What makes the movie first, you have to accept that here's a ghost who looks like a Halloween ghost, which that's fairly easy to accept. You can
of course
buy that if that's how you've chosen to show ghosts in this movie, that's fine. But then more trying of the patience is that there are several scenes that are a few minutes long where nobody's saying anything or doing very much.
Do you want to eliminate like a few? They're minutes long, people. It's minutes of
the quiet. The main one, fairly early in the movie, is Rooney Mara in grief eating a pie, and I measured it. First, it's a 50-second shot, 50 seconds of her standing up eating the pie, and then 180 seconds, so 3 full minutes of her sitting on the floor, continuing to eat the pie in an unbroken take, and she's not talking, she's just eating and grieving, and there's her ghost husband, who she doesn't see, the ghost standing there observing. There are a few things like that, where there's a lot of not anything happening, or the two of them before he dies, but the two of them in bed, just like sort of nuzzling each other, things like that. And that can be very trying of the patients.
And that's unfortunately what I was stuck in.
And I don't blame anybody for that. I was prepared for it when I saw it. I knew kind of what to expect, but that does try the patience. And even I liked the movie a lot, but I could do without all of that. And I don't know. I would be curious to read interviews with Lowery. I suspect what he would say about it is that it's to establish the tone and the mood and the whole thing of Casey is waiting. He's lingering behind in this house as a ghost. Time passes for him very quickly. Like something happens. It upsets him, and by the time he responds in anger by ghost knocking books off the shelves, it's already the next day or several days later. Like time passes, he turns around, and whoa, things are gone, and that's it has an effect on you, where you feel the melancholy and sort of the loneliness and the hey, I'm missing out, like things are going on without me, like that. That's I think it's very effective at conveying that feeling and the feeling of being stuck and not sure what to do.
There's a party. There's a house party that's just great, and the conversations that are had there and everything are just lovely.
Kind of one guy kind of monologues, the themes of the movie, basically.
But yeah, it did. It threw me for a loop. I wasn't ready for it, and it's interesting to kind of to allow yourself to be like, maybe that was me.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't just you, or yes, now I totally fully get it that second time around, but I still feel like
still you could may not be for you.
Cut it shorter, or you know, something to that effect. Oh, also, it's a square with curved corners.
Yeah, the frame
that is what you're watching. So that is not wrong when you go to the theater.
Looks like an old timey photograph with the rounded corners and almost square frame,
or a slide.
Yeah, or a slide. What else about this? Oh, I think the music in this is fantastic. Daniel Hart wrote the music, and there are a couple of. I mean, I saw this movie several days ago, and there's still bits of the music in my head, which does not happen very often in movies, for part of the score to linger. And there's one scene in particular where I'm still hearing the music in my head, where the music is very plaintive and unresolved. The music, it keeps getting higher and higher, but not quite resolving the chord, which is perfect for the scene that accompanies of emotions being unresolved. And I think the music is very effective. It's often, the movie is always either very quiet or very loud, as this very lush, loud music will play over montages, whatever. I give Ghost Story B+.
Would you like me to state it for a record with the option of changing it and updating it?
You can if you want. It's up to you. Whatever you like.
I think for now, I'm comfortable saying for me it was a 5 out of 10. Okay. But I might change that in the future, people.
10 out of 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the nice thing about life is you can go back and you can change your mind.
Each day is new,
from
what I've understood.
Hey, listeners, do you like hearing things other than us? Like if someone were reading a book to you?
I would love it if you came over and read me a book.
Mm-hmm. Well, even better, I got someone on who's been recorded doing it. And through Audible, our listeners can get a free trial at audible.com and get a free book download. And we get a little kickback. You just go to audibletrial.com/moviebs. And they got like 180,000 books to choose from.
There's a movie called Wonder Boys.
Yes.
You guys aren't going to believe this. Based on a book.
By Michael Chabon.
A small handful of times. But I've seen a movie, loved it, and then decided to read the book. And the book pays off.
That's funny you say that because I actually was just about to recommend another Michael Chabon book. That I actually did just listen to called Moonglow. It's a memoir. It's about his grandparents and his grandfather who was in World War II and stuff. And I just finished listening to that. Quite good. But yeah, audibletrial.com/moviebs. You can sign up for a free 30-day trial. You get a free book download. You can cancel after the 30 days, and we get a little commission for you doing all that. Also, speaking of things you can download, we recorded a commentary for the movie The Princess Bride.
Never heard of it.
No, you did. You were there. We recorded the thing together.
That's right. Thank you for the reminder.
And you can download that. Now, if you're an agent, if you're a Movie BS agent, you get to download that for free. And if you have not done so and don't know how to do so, send us an email. We'll tell you how. But if you're not, what do we call the non-agents?
Well, remember how I said we should call them chumps?
Yeah, the chumps.
Well, I was doing something else, and I decided to write that down so I could remember it. Wrote down chips.
Okay. All right.
So they're chips.
All right. So a non-agent.
Agents and chips.
Are chips. You got to pay $2 for the Princess Bride commentary. And we also have a Predator commentary for Predator that we recorded about 5 years ago.
That's listen to it.
Also, they're on MovieBS, MovieBS.com. So commentaries you can download. We're going to do some more commentaries. I think Back to the Future is our next one we're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to get on that soon.
Oh, and our July movie of the month.
Yes, more housekeeping. July movie of the month, a movie that we have not seen before, that we should have, and we're going to, and now you can watch it too. And what is it?
Dangerous Liaisons.
1988. So watch that if you have not before, or if you have and you want to refresh your memory, and we'll talk about it in the first show of August. Dangerous Liaison.
There's an S.
They don't pronounce them in France.
Dang it.
Yeah, they're weird over there.
Smart.
Maybe it's a little bit in the nose that French speakers can sort of hear it, or it's just context, but yeah, dangerous singular and plural will be pronounced the same.
Thank you.
I don't see how it's not confusing, but...
People think they're just supposed to be listening to learn about movies. That's not the case here.
Probably anyone who ever took a French class, which is a lot of people, probably know that basic of French pronunciation.
I took a French class.
I didn't know until we went to France. So we went to Cannes, and I tried to bone up on French a little bit before we went.
That's why. Are you just trying to bring up the fact that just yesterday I told somebody I've never been to France. Is that what you were just doing right
and
now?
That person reminded you had been to Cannes?
Yeah. Is that what you're doing right now?
No, but I'm glad you brought it up. That was funny. Classic bear. Nope, never been to France.
Well, you know, I haven't been to Paris. So there you go, people.
Right. Let's talk about the box office, summer box office challenge.
Okay.
We do have to. We're obligated.
I know. Now, let's open up the wound. I'll undress my bandage.
Well, just briefly, there's not much to say. You had War for the Planet of the Apes, which did not do disappointingly, but it didn't do amazing business.
I think the word is fine.
Did fine. $56 million. It had been forecast as maybe as high as 70, but generally probably they figured 50 to 60. So now you have Dunkirk and Girls Trip are both this weekend, and I have Valerian. This would be a big weekend. We have three movies.
Yeah.
Be a lot of movement here. Dunkirk could be a huge hit. It's forecast at like 40 to 50 million. It could be a surprise and be even bigger. If Dunkirk does like 80 million, then you're still in it.
Okay.
Short of that, then I feel like it's over.
Yeah. Because otherwise all of my efforts are hanging in the balance of The Dark Tower.
Yeah.
Which we're hearing suspicious things about.
Mm-hmm. And the Emoji Movie, which is not being screened for critics. When they don't screen a cartoon, when they don't screen kids movie,
they're really not?
They really are. Maybe a junket screening in New York, but in general, no, they're not screening.
So critics, if you're listening, make sure to see it in 3D opening weekend.
Yeah.
Anyway, it looks dire for me, but you know what? I'm sitting around and I'm trying to remain positive. Maybe wearing a clown suit is good for me on some level. I don't know yet. I'm open to the experience of clowning around.
Clown suit will definitely be a good experience for me.
You know what I hope? I hope it has one of those like hoops in the middle that makes everything big, like a hula hoop under outfit.
The pants.
Because
then
it's like I can just probably like free ball, be totally naked under there, and just really enjoy myself.
Great idea.
Nice breeze.
I wonder how much taller your clown wig will make you. Because you're already kind of stand out at Fantastic Fest because you're tall.
It would also be great if the only clown outfit we could find is like for somebody who's like 5'10". And I had to wear it.
Little midget clown.
Whoa.
5'10's not midget. That's how tall I am.
Yeah.
I'm not a midget. You take that back. Girls Trip this weekend. Another one. They screened that in some cities, but not Portland or Salt Lake City, as it happens. It is from Universal, the last Universal movie that screened most places, but not Portland, was Get Out.
Oh, yeah.
So the movie's about black people. Universal is like, hey, we're not going to bother screening those for critics in the white cities.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate.
Get Out was brilliant, and Girls Trip might be a fun time.
The trailer for Girls Trip makes me laugh. Got
Does
a couple
it?
Lines in there that makes me laugh. And yes. Yeah. But they didn't want to waste their money. And generally, I just feel like Portland's getting pooped on. I feel like the studios decide, Portland doesn't matter. Show them our big IMAX 70mm movie. just show it to them on their phones or whatever. Just project it on the side of a building.
We've had some recent ratio issues that we would like to be fixed, but it's not
And that's not the studio. That's the local theaters being run by clowns and monkeys, but not in a good way. You think, well, being run by clowns and monkeys, that sounds great. No, but like in a bad way.
Yeah. Yeah, these aren't those highly trained monkeys that you can like do sign language with.
No, these are the poop-throwing monkeys that they put in charge of screening, screening movies. DVDs. Here's what's on DVD this week. You ready?
Yes.
Free Fire. Ben Wheatley movie, Free Fire.
Loved it. Can't wait to sit through it again.
I did.
Really liked it. Sorry. I'm taking that back. Really liked it.
I liked it too. And that one kind of got lost in the shuffle. Good fun violence. You know, people shooting at each other in a warehouse. And then also The Promise about the Armenian genocide. Not a bad movie, but you know.
It seems like there is a book out there that would serve the purpose that movie is attempting. There's also Buster's Malheart on Blu-ray, as well as Kong Skull Island.
Oh, yes, indeed. Both of those are
out. So if you have a giant TV, go ahead and watch Kong Skull Island. Otherwise, rent it, knock on somebody's door, and ask to see their TV.
There you go.
And if it's bigger than yours, then tell them what you're about to do.
Kong Skull Island was good. And Buster's Malheart, I think, is worth seeing. It's an interesting, not quite success.
It's a good movie to experience, and it's okay to dislike.
Yeah. And if you're, like, but if you're feeling movie. If you're feeling adventurous, I don't feel like I need to see the big Hollywood blockbuster. If you want to try something a little off the beaten path, Buster's Malheart would be worthy of that.
Speaking of giveaways,
yeah, sure, we will.
We got two copies of a movie I am genuinely excited to see, even though critics have told me not to be. I didn't get around to it. Ghost in the Shell.
You can't listen to critics. They don't know what they're talking
about. You can't
about.
Listen to critics. What do they know?
You know what? This Ghost in the Shell was made for fans, not for critics.
There we go. So agents, if you are an agent, you are eligible for one of the two copies of Ghost in the Shell. Now, if you're a chip, then we have opened up
the, hang on. Well, let's finish the first one first. If you're an agent, send us an email and tell us you would like a copy. And we will randomly choose two of you.
I was just getting so excited that I think I was like really, I was really being a team player.
Sure. But so that's Ghost in the Shell. If you're an agent, send us an email if you want a copy. And then what else?
For all the chips out there, you can have the boss if you want it. Just email us and we'll give it to you.
The Melissa McCarthy film, we opened it up to agents. No agents claimed it. So now it's to you, you regular people, you normals. Yep. First come, first served on that one.
There we go.
And that brings us to the end of our show then today.
Oh, thank goodness.
We have one we really recommend.
Dunkirk.
Go see that. And Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets is all right.
It's really close to being something.
If you like big, crazy-looking fantasy spectacles, the goofier the better. It's one of those.
Yes.
And a ghost story I like a lot and you did not like, but are open to the possibility of possibly liking at some point.
Yes, I didn't like, but ..
Right. Film festivals are sometimes the worst places to watch a movie. sometimes the worst conditions.
Especially when, like, the night before, somebody's like, it's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And then three other people say the same thing, and then I'm like, wow, I'm really looking forward to that movie tomorrow.
Yeah.
Expectations. You'd think you
would learn.
You'd think.
Until next week, for Movie Us with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.